It's Sarah from the future. Everything's great here. Melissa and Teresa are getting along so well. Life seems possible. Moments after Dylan Hafer and I finished recording this all-new Andy's Girls, we found out the news that the world over has since discovered. Tom and Ariana are no longer, because Tom was shtupping Raquel. Head on over to the Andy's Girls Patreon to get a 40-minute emergency episode deep diving what this means for VPR and so much more. Patreon.com/Andy's Girls. Number one way to support the pod. And just remember, kids, never fuck a Tom. I'm spiritually mid-20s plus and mid in nothing else.
This award season, I'm the front runner in putting up with your bullshit.
You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's a recording from the Clothis, which is my literal favorite thing in the universe. So I'm so excited to have back my Bravo BFF. We actually do need to talk maybe some Oscar stuff. Oh, wait, the Oscars are coming up. I might literally need to ask you back now. Any Oscars to discuss, okay. Whatever.
Sunday, down. March 12th.
Okay, perfect. Sunday, March 12th. And today is whatever favorite day it is, because I have this person back. You know him as Senior Content Manager Entertainment at Betches Media, host of the podcast Mention It All, and creator of Bravo by Betches. Welcome back to Andy's Girls, Dylan Hafer. Dylan, how are we?
Hello, I'm well, thank you.
Oh my God, I feel like so much has happened. I need to get your thoughts on so much going on. I literally were recording this Friday afternoonish. I just watched New Jersey. Mm-hmm. I just watched Miami.
You know what's funny? There is so much going on right now. And when I was thinking, you asked me yesterday to come record, and I was
just so you guys know, that's how I roll.
I mean, I had already watched.
You available in an hour?
I had already watched everything. So it wasn't like I had to sit down and cram to prepare for this. But in my head, I'm just thinking like, okay, like we'll definitely talk about Miami, you know, maybe Potomac. I don't know. I forgot that New Jersey was happening.
Yes.
And then you said that. I'm like, oh, duh. Yeah. Okay. I did watch it. I did already recap it on my own podcast this week. Like my mind is mush right now, because not only are there all these Bravo shows happening, Summer House, Vanderpump right. Rules. There's lawsuits, there's divorces, there's news.
Oh my God.
It feels like I never like to complain about an embarrassment of riches, but it's like right now it is genuinely like an equation, a math problem to figure out how much do I care about this thing? Mm-hmm. How much do I talk about this thing? Because like there are only so many hours in the day.
Is there a difference in what you cover or feature on your pod because you know that the audience is going to have a lot to say about like a specific franchise versus what you personally are interested in when it comes to all things Bravo?
Sometimes. I mean, I know like with Andy's Girls, you mostly focus on Real Housewives, which yeah. I think is like a helpful narrowing. Sometimes I do struggle with that. And actually, so last year I normally do 3 episodes a week, some with guests, some with, you know, fellow podcasters, content creators, whatever. And I actually started doing extra mini bonus solo episodes last year so I could recap Top Chef every week. Because yes. I was like, I want to talk about Top Chef. And I know that it's not as popular with our audience as Real Housewives of New Jersey, let's say. But sometimes I'm like, I want to do this. And also, it's not like nobody else watches Top Chef. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those episodes might not get like the same number of downloads, but it's like it's not like only for me. But yeah, it is tough. And also, you know, trying to juggle, you know, if you want to have guests on, then that's less kind of recap time and what's the right balance. Guys, it's fucking hard.
Yes.
That's the thing. It's like every time I circle back, I'm like, no, this is like, it's fine.
What's your preference? Like, what's your energy when you record solo versus with a co-host?
Well, I don't do solo okay. very often. Like, I'll do those little mini bonus episodes, or like occasionally I'll, like after I went to LA last year, I did like a 30-minute solo just rant about my experience at all the Vanderpump establishments.
Oh my God.
But you know, the solo stuff, it's more like, okay, like I want to talk about this, but it's, I'm not going to have the opportunity to with a guest. Whereas like, you know, I've had you on my podcast numerous times, are some of our mutual friends, like Danny Murphy, mm-hmm. Evan Real, people like that. It's like fun to just like,
yeah,
chat and, you know, get into it with. But like doing interviews is also, it's like a whole separate thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're having, you know, I had Danielle from Summer House on my podcast this week, and that was great. I had a great time talking to her, but that's like such a different vibe than if you and I were to sit down and talk about Summer House for 30 minutes.
Also, I feel like it becomes a difficult position when you're releasing an interview because, well, I don't know if it's difficult. It's an opportunity, certainly, for other members of the cast to join the discussion. So like you posted a clip of that interview with Danielle and then Lindsay responded. Now, you are a content creator. You have this thriving population over at Bravo by Betches. Surely getting cast participation in promotions for episodes must be nice, but is it also like a little uncomfortable when someone's like, I'm going to do a light drag here?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I try and stay not always neutral in situations, yeah. because I do think, obviously, if you don't have any opinions, that's, nobody's going to care to pay attention to what you're saying. But I try and approach things from a, you know, sort of an objective level. And like, I had Lindsay and Carl on my podcast 3 weeks ago. Mm. And if I, you know, it's not like because I had Danielle on to sort of share her side of the story, I don't feel like I'm, you know, choosing one side or the other.
Right.
You know, maybe some people would see that differently, but I don't know. I'm an equal opportunity. dirty laundry error.
Have you found anything particularly surprising about the ways that Danielle and Lindsay talk to you about each other? Was one potentially more vulnerable, let's say, than the other? Like, who did you maybe connect with the most? I know that's a really unfair question, but here we go.
Yeah, I think we talked about it. I talked about Lindsay's, the Lindsay stuff more with Danielle than I talked about the Danielle stuff with Lindsay. I think when I had Lindsay on, it was like the premiere week or maybe even the week before. So I had seen the premiere, but it wasn't
mm-hmm.
on yet. And there was just kind of other stuff to talk about. Carl was there too. Like, we talked about it a little bit, but not as directly. Whereas with Danielle, I felt like she was really open about mm-hmm. it. And also having just recently confirmed that she and Robert broke up a few months back.
Aye.
That's kind of an extra layer on it where like Danielle right now, I think, is in a really raw place, kind of, that she lost this relationship that she was in for 2 years and she lost this friendship that she had for a long time. And she said, and you know, she said to me, I got my heart broken twice last year. And so I think that kind of like, it's not necessarily that I connected with her more, but I feel like the energy that she brought to the conversation was a little more raw.
And it is interesting, you know, we talked before we started recording about the fact that I'm like woefully behind, certainly in Vanderpump Rules, I'm an episode behind in Summer House. But all that being said, it is kind of interesting to watch the ways that like Paige, for example, and the people from Paige's circle, essentially, because Paige seems like a little bit of a ringleader there, have responded to the Lindsay and Danielle breakup versus, I would say, obviously, Lindsay. Do you think that there's any truth to the idea that like Paige being so invested in making sure Danielle feels appreciated is less about Danielle and more about her quasi blonde nemesis?
I think that's I don't think that's an unfair way to interpret it. I don't know. I mean, I feel like with Summer House the last few seasons, there has been this kind of clicky energy that maybe comes and goes a little bit. It's not mm-hmm. always as strong, but I'm not going to say that I think there's no kind of just hating on Lindsay to hate on Lindsay. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there is, that is an element of the show that I don't always enjoy, that it seems like a little bit of mean girl energy directed at Lindsay, kind of just because that's the way it's decided it's going to be. Mm. But also, you know, Lindsay's not an angel.
Yeah, I think that's like the interesting thing with Summer House, is that I feel like they wear some of their scars a little more outwardly than other shows. Maybe that's because that's like the actual setup of the show, is that it's Summer House. People get a little, you know, shit faced or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that has sort of been the setup of the show, which has matured, I would say, since that point. Obviously, that still happens, but it's certainly the incorporation of like friendship fractures and fame, I think, have adjusted maybe that scope a little bit.
I think also with Summer House, because we really, for the most part, only see them on those weekends of the summer that they are at the house together, with a few exceptions, we aren't really following their lives as much as we are following their relationships with each other. And if you think about that in contrast to a Housewives show, you can have two people on a Housewives cast that barely are in the same place all season in certain circumstances, or they're only together in full group scenes, but they never really interact that much. Mm. And you have a full storyline happening on your own. You can, you know, go to lunch with whichever one or two people from the cast that you're getting along with. And with Summer House, I mean, that's not really how it's structured. And so there's never really that time or space to get to know these people outside of the group dynamic as much.
Like, you can get isolated from relationships, but not necessarily the environment, you know?
Yeah. And like, if Summer House was Real Housewives of, you know, New York, let's say, Paige and Lindsay wouldn't be hanging out on a Tuesday night.
Right.
Unless there was like a whole group event or something. And then we would see Paige doing her own things. We would see Lindsay doing their own things, but it's just like more condensed.
Yeah. And I feel like the structure probably helps in some way to get that extra pop, because while there are cast members who are away on certain weekends because of, you know, like life circumstances or maybe work professional obligations, you are typically there throughout. And then I think of, for example, the newest episode of Jersey, and also just kind of the energy right now. And it is interesting to watch the ways that Joe seems to have chosen to isolate himself from both quasi moving on with Teresa, but also these group dynamics that I would think ordinarily he would 100% want to be there for.
Yeah, I think that is a really interesting point, that when Teresa's having her love bubble housewarming party, as
let go of the bubble,
as it's called, obviously, you know, we've been watching these shows for a long time. When somebody's having an event like that on the season, of course it's their personal event that they're celebrating in their life, but it is also a full cast group filming day that everybody on the show was invited to, and for the most part everybody on the show is showing up to. And you know, it's like Margaret Josephs could think of I'm sure she could think of something she'd rather be doing on, you know, a Thursday night in July than being at Teresa and Louis's house celebrating their love bubble for the 45th time. But she's gonna show up because it's a group filming event and she doesn't have any real reason not to be there. And I think with Joe, it's tough because on one hand, I totally get why he doesn't want to be there. They're not really on good terms. The phone conversation that they had where Teresa theoretically wanted to make peace was not at all convincing to me, that, you know, there was no real outreach in terms of like, please come, I would love to have you there. It was very just like, are you coming? Not sure. Okay. And there's also the side that it's like, I wish he would just show up, because it feels like we're getting these kind of like half moments. And the thing with Melissa being there and having that really uncomfortable exchange with Gabriella and Gia, it's like, it's unfortunate that that's all we're getting, where there's clearly so much more that could be unpacked there.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Joe obviously is uninterested in unpacking it. You could say that's from exhaustion or disinterest or hurt or whatever. But if this man is saying explicitly, I just want to move on, I do not want to talk about it, then why aren't we moving on?
Right. And it's tough because going back to the end of last season, Melissa was very candid for really, I think, the first time, or at least more than she ever had been before, about maybe this is done. Maybe we're done trying. We can just cut our losses and say, hey, this relationship isn't going to happen. We don't have to keep rehashing this every year. It's not good for anyone involved. It's not good for our kids. It's not good for us. It's not good for, you know, the memory of our parents or whatever. But then going back into this season, we're four episodes in, I think, and we're doing it again. Mm-hmm. Like, why are we on the phone talking about making peace if nobody actually cares about that at all? But then also it's like, if you're gonna care about it, then like show up and put in the effort.
What do you think peace looks like for Joe?
I don't really know. I don't, because that's the thing, that's a good question, because like peace, it could just be we sweep this under the rug and we never talk about it again and we're just cordial to each other at family functions, but that doesn't really mean anything. If you're just saying we're never going to have any relationship deeper than a surface level, hey, how you doing? How's the kids? Good, good, good. Okay, good. See you next time. Like, that's not adding anything to anybody's life. It just is it's an absence of chaos, I guess, which might be an improvement. But if you think about it in any sort of deeper level, I don't think anybody's thinking, when they say peace, I don't think anybody's thinking, oh yeah, we're all going to be family again and have Thanksgiving together and come over to each other's house on Easter. Like, I don't think anybody really sees that in the cards or particularly wants that.
Yeah, and they've had little moments of it, but it was typically after huge life-altering environmental shifts that we're kind of dipping back into a little, but not a lot. It just leaves me like watching these scenes and just thinking like, if we're talking about the ways that Teresa not asking Melissa to be in the bridal party and Teresa not inviting Melissa's family feels like a sign of disrespect, but what do you think not showing up to her family housewarming is?
Yeah, I struggle to even know how to talk about it because it's hard to talk about without coming across as so choosing a side, because the discourse around the show and especially on social media has been so polarized the last couple, three, I don't know, seasons.
Right.
But I mean, there are certain situations in which I absolutely disagree with both people. You know, there are certain situations in which I think Teresa is like 100% in the wrong. Mm-hmm. And there are certain situations where I think Joe is like a fucking disaster. But I think it's tough to really feel like there's no real productive way to unpack the conversation because it has been so lines drawn in the sand. And I'm like, I don't, if nobody, you know, like if the Melissa fans don't want her to be friends with Teresa and the Teresa fans don't want her to be friends with Melissa, then why don't we all just go our separate ways?
I don't know that it's only or majority just about these people not wanting to be each other's friends. I feel like it's the rival communities feeling disrespected and them saying like, you should respect my queen more, or what you're just doing on this episode is a sign of disrespect. And that is a difficult environment to navigate, because if someone believes or feels that they're being disrespected, obviously they're probably not going to participate in environments in which that furthers, right? Like, you think that you're setting up boundaries, but this show is about an environment in which like those boundaries are not necessarily celebrated or supported just by the very nature of filming these kinds of events.
Yeah, I will say this season so far has made me hopeful with the new cast members and who I think are doing really well in their first few episodes, that maybe there can be a future for this franchise that doesn't feel like it solely orbits around Teresa and Melissa. Because, I mean, these last few seasons, I think most people agree they've had a great run the last few years. And of course,
they meaning the show, like in general.
Jersey.
Okay, yeah.
And of course, not everything in those last few seasons has been about Teresa versus Melissa, but the cast has still been so split down that divide where you really still have kind of like Team Teresa and Team Melissa. And I am hoping that maybe like next season that could sort of start to, you know, splinter a little bit.
Do you think there is a possibility that like Teresa would choose and be happy with potentially like a spinoff and Melissa staying on New Jersey, or is that completely unrealistic?
It's so hard to know because there was a real narrative or, you know, whispering that that could happen this season, that there was a real, I don't know if it was a rumor or, you know, a source, you know, a quote unquote source saying that like basically Teresa was going to get soft fired and given a spinoff and that Melissa would stay on the show. And obviously that didn't happen this year. Who knows kind of how real it was in the first place. But it's tough to imagine Teresa really choosing to walk away from Housewives. I could see it being something that is presented as her choice, but is really like a corporate, like, you're not going to get to be on Housewives anymore. We've decided, but we're giving you this other thing. And so you can announce that however you'd like. And it's a lot less embarrassing to say, I'm so happy I got my spinoff, versus like they fired me from Housewives and offered me this instead. But I don't see Teresa like asking for that, if that makes sense.
I don't see it as being fired because she's such a huge fucking asset. I see them as repositioning her if they don't want to lose Melissa, because I think Melissa works in a group dynamic and Teresa has enough going on that could potentially support an independent show a la Bethany, where it's like this person, you can't make the argument that like now she's bigger than the show because Teresa has always been integral to New Jersey and like her power has accrued over time. But there could be the argument that maybe the ensemble vibe isn't necessarily where we can leverage the most content out of this person. Maybe we do Bethany her off into a Teresa Ever After dynamic. That way we're able to keep Melissa, because I just don't honestly think, I don't see that happening for Melissa. I don't see Melissa getting Melissa and Joe do house stuff. You know, like I just don't.
No.
I think Melissa actually works well in a group dynamic, and maybe that's the best way to keep them both.
I agree with you. I think that is, to me, that sounds like a logical, likely to succeed plan that would allow this show to move into sort of a new phase. But also it just is kind of like a big leap. And based on what we've seen Bravo do with casting and decisions like that in the past, I don't know that I see them having the sort of creative I'm trying to think, because I don't mean this in a bad way. I mean, I don't necessarily see them taking that leap in that way. When
it would be a gamble.
It would be a gamble, and I think it would still be seen as by a lot of people as New Jersey losing its biggest asset.
Yeah,
which I don't think in actuality of, in terms of the quality and the show and the direction it's going, I don't think it would be them losing their biggest asset. But in terms of just star power and the narrative of having an OG, this, you know, in some way, shape or form has always been the Teresa show. And I say that as somebody who is by no means a tree hugger or a Teresa stan, But it's undeniable that right. she has always been sort of the lightning rod at the center of the show. And I think it would be sort of a tough pill to swallow for a lot of people to pull the plug on that in a way, even if it was clearing the way for, you know, a brighter day somewhere else.
Yeah, I would think it has to be slightly uncomfortable for Melissa and Joe to process as like actual family of Teresa, the ways that she's moving on into her love bubble journey and the kind of affection and positivity she's maybe shown toward Louis's family. And I like wonder how that factors into all of this. Like if she was to kind of go into a new dynamic or a new universe, how would his family potentially participate in that? Because obviously Joe and Melissa would not be a part of,
right.
I would think, any Teresa storyline aside from being spoken of, not speaking to.
Yeah. I posted last week about the decision on Teresa's part not to invite the Marcos to her, Melissa's family to her wedding.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I basically tweeted, like, whichever way you slice it, I think that's weird. That the fact that Marge Sr. was invited to that wedding, right. Jennifer's mom was invited to that wedding, Chanel Ayan was at that wedding. Regardless of how everybody's getting along, I think it is a weird decision not to invite her. Melissa's mom specifically. The sisters kind of too, but the mom. And I got a lot of responses. I mean, of course, tweeting about Real Housewives of New Jersey is just asking for it. Oof. But I got a lot of responses. Some were more kind of aggressive, but a lot of people kind of had the sentiment of, it's her wedding. She can invite whoever she wants. Everybody here is an adult. She can do what she wants to do. And the thing is, I agree with that. I don't disagree with that sentiment. But the way I see it, it's like, I don't think Teresa should be thrown in jail for not inviting Donna Marco to her wedding. I think it is weird. I think it's a very clear-cut choice that sends a very clear-cut message. And whatever history has happened, it really just says, I don't give a fuck about having you in my life. And I thought it was very interesting on this week's episode that the comparison was made between that decision and Melissa and Joe not inviting Louis's family to Antonia's Sweet 16. First of all, a wedding and a Sweet 16 are not the same.
Not the same.
No matter how big the Sweet 16 is, it's not a family wedding. But also, Donna Marco has known Teresa for 20-something years.
Right.
She knew Teresa's parents. She spent a lot of time with Teresa's parents and with the girls and with Teresa. Louis's family have been in Melissa and Joe's life for 2 or 3 years. And most of that time, they have not even been on great terms. So Melissa and Joe, and certainly Antonia, do not have any kind of long-term, deep-seated relationship with Louis's family. So to me, that sort of weakened Teresa's stance on that rather than strengthening it, because it's like, you see those as like equal chess pieces? Because to me, it's like, if you don't want to invite Donna Marco, okay, make that decision. You did make that decision. It's your wedding. You can invite who you want. But to try and like bargain with that and be like, well, maybe if Donna wanted to get invited, they should have invited Louis's family to the Sweet 16. It's like, does that make sense to you? Because it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and also,
Say you don't want them there.
Right.
And I don't want Donna there, period.
And the ... is, I don't want Donna there because she is Melissa's mom. It's not, I don't want Donna there because Donna has done something to upset me, which I think is, there's like a lack of transparency that for whatever reason, Teresa is unwilling to communicate. But that muddies the water a little bit when you're not being honest about what's going on. I think that is where the upset from Joe and Melissa come from, where they're like, don't tell us that this wasn't meant to be an insult. It was.
Right.
And I'm sure that adds a burden to Melissa and Joe of like, how do we move forward if we feel like we're being insulted at the same time? It just shows an absolute lack of trust between these people. And it makes me sad because, as was communicated to Teresa, the reason for Joe that there's some upset is because of his mother-in-law's relationship with his dad, which mm-hmm. cannot potentially be understated, especially if you have a very small family that's become even smaller because the Wakilis are no longer a part of, I think, either of these people's lives. Like, truly, if you're saying Joe is my only family, it's like, well, technically there are other family members, Kathy, Richie, Rosie, whomever mm-hmm. else we haven't actually met through Housewives, who have been isolated against both of these parties. I don't think Joe and Melissa kept in touch with the I think there might have been some sort of follow-up.
No, the Gorgas and the Wakilis, I don't think, are on good terms.
Right. So it's like some of this, when we talk about a small family, 100%, I don't disagree with that. But I am also thinking of like, well, some of this, there are also other circles here.
Yeah, there's I think there, obviously, we don't have every piece of every.
Right.
Piece of that puzzle, but to say there's a difference between like I have no other family alive on this earth,
right,
and like I have no one else that I could call, like right. Those are two different things to say. And yeah, like none of those people were at Teresa's wedding.
Yeah. And it
the Wakilis were not at Teresa's wedding,
of course not. And that's me saying of course not because yeah. of the current environment. It's just it is an intro whenever there's any kind of family dynamic, especially the Joe, Melissa, Teresa, and now Louis dynamic. Obviously, some of this is performative because of the purposes of mm-hmm. how Shakespearean this kind of tragedy has become. But also, it's real stuff. And the difficulty when you're planning a wedding, definitely circumstances. There's the LOL of like mother-daughter dynamics certainly comes up with many people in many cultures of like whose actual wedding is this? And that can compound itself with any number of like gender representation, relationships, everything else. But also sometimes these weddings are an opportunity to like make peace, right? Mm-hmm. To show and reflect peace being made. And also understanding that, you know, while Teresa maybe didn't invite Donna because she was, let's say, setting boundaries or something with Melissa, or not feeling like she wanted to have more of Melissa's family there for whatever reason, or for whatever reason decision that she made that choice. Weddings sometimes are, there's like a little bit of a percentage there of like, what am I going to give up? Who are mm-hmm. the people who I wouldn't necessarily want to have there for whatever reason, who I'm still going to invite? Because if I don't, it's going to compound whatever issue, invisible or otherwise, that's currently ongoing. Like
right.
the decision not to invite Donna obviously created much more conflict than potential internal conflict, which maybe it's unfair for me to say, that Teresa was experiencing about Donna
right,
or, like you, or Melissa.
Right.
Or
like if
else.
Donna was invited and chose to come, which I think would have been a question mark in the end anyway,
wouldn't have shown up.
But it's like if she was there,
knowing what we know,
you can put her in the back corner table. You're not even going to see her that night. Like Donna Marco being there is not going to ruin your wedding.
Well, conversely, there is a certain amount of just like, sorry to say it, swallowing it. If Teresa, if we're arguing in an alternate universe that she would have swallowed whatever she needed to invite Donna, to keep the peace and not. Even if it wasn't intended this way to like add an additional jab to this fight, the flip side of that is if Joe and Melissa or yeah. Donna are seated at a shitty table like they were for the engagement party, you were invited, your family, or I don't remember if the family was invited to that, but like both parties need to give 10%. It mm-hmm. can't only be Teresa giving 10.
Yeah.
And obviously they wouldn't even know if she was giving 10, because had she invited Donna, they would have just thought this is business as usual. Of course she would be invited. they don't know that she might be internalizing some animosity or discomfort or whatever else she's feeling. Sometimes you don't know that mm-hmm. until you feel like you've already been insulted. But conversely, if Joe and Melissa are seated at a shitty table, you're in the room, your family's in the room. It's all about family, love, love, love.
You can still get in the housewife group picture.
You can still get in the housewife group picture. You'll still be in the wedding special. And, you know, you got to give that 10%. It's a tithing. It's a relational tithing.
Yeah.
And by gotta, I mean, like, ideally in a universe, if we are working toward peace, mm-hmm. there is an expectation that maybe someone's poor behavior or what you receive as poor behavior might continue in some sort of way. We are all human. If a person has been ingrained to do like passive aggressive anything or react or mistrust your activity, that's not going to go away on its own. But ideally, there is also that 10%. Mm-hmm. And I say that devil's advocating, saying Joe and Melissa might feel like they've given 100% for however many years and they're done. But
yeah,
then let's talk about, then let's say we're done. Right. Then let's say I don't want peace. I just kind of need to put this to bed and I need a break. It's mm-hmm. hard when Joe is arguing that he wants to move forward while he's really, really, really pulling back. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo. And when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth. And when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. Their leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon.
But you know who's not pulling back?
Everybody else. Danielle.
Jennifer Aiden working those phones.
Jennifer Aiden doing the Lord's work. But you know what I found so interesting? Was that fucking dinner with Bill where she said to her husband, I thought it was so interesting because I did believe that she believes this way, which is half the battle with Jen Aiden, that she's like, I need you to help me escalate bad dynamics because that is how I view support. And him saying, what if I want to de-escalate? And her like, what about our kids? What lessons are we teaching our kids? And she's like, that's not the game we're playing right now. The game we're playing right now is if I come in hot, you need to be the same temperature, which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah, I think we have this conversation more often about friendships and what it means to be a good friend to someone.
Right.
That sometimes being a yes man to whatever somebody is saying isn't the kind of support that someone actually needs to receive,
but a lot of the time,
the support that somebody says they want,
right.
But that's not actually the best way to be a good friend 100%. To somebody, and that loyalty is not the same as, you know, you know, blind, you know, blind loyalty is not the same as good support. But Jennifer's asking for that in her marriage, basically saying, I expect you, if I come in here saying that Dolores
is a con,
is the worst person I've ever met, and everything that she ever says is wrong and evil and an affront to me, you need to say, yes, baby, I agree. What can we do to get her ass?
Yeah.
And Bill, to be clear, Bill Aiden is not a perfect guy. As we've established.
None of these men are, except from Evan Goldschneider, the gold standard for every husband on the planet.
Bill Aiden has buckets of flaws. But
and Joe the Plumber.
But I think Bill Aiden in this situation is trying his best to look out for his wife and to kind of like keep her on a level that is not going to be just like car crash territory at all times, because he can actually look at these situations with, you know, 1 ounce of nuance and be like, okay, baby, I understand that you're not feeling Dolores right now, but maybe we can take a step back, think about this a little bit, you know, da 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 da. And like, I think it's interesting to see that, because in that way, I'm like, yeah, I think Bill's right. You should listen to Bill.
Yeah, it's like Bill's trying to say my support is saying that I'm not going to add on to poor behavior, and I'm actually trying to help your behavior by bringing down the temperature. And I just wonder how much of that is like about the show, right? Because something can be about the show and still be completely valid in hurting or impacting a marriage or being representative of what's going on when the cameras aren't there. For Jen, I just think she really wants to have that cheerleader, I'm sure, also because she feels like she doesn't have one in this friend circle. Teresa's not going to be that girl for her unless it's a specific dynamic, I think, with Melissa or someone that Teresa is, you know, opposed to for whatever reason. Jen Aiden does not have that cheerleader. Jen Aiden is a cheerleader for her own potentially diabolical reasons or otherwise, but she doesn't necessarily have one. And she's like, Bill, you need to be that person. You need to step up.
It just occurred to me that I would be really curious to know what Jennifer Aiden's friendships look like that we don't see on the show. Because I don't know, because every relationship that we know of that she has is in relationship to the show. And maybe I'm forgetting something, but I don't think anyone that's ever been on the show with her is really somebody that she's known from before, had a relationship with from before. I don't think we've ever really seen her bring a friend onto the show.
Yes.
And so I don't know if she has those people that just aren't interested in being on TV, or if she just, you know, before she spent a lot of time being a housewife and raising those kids, and maybe the cultural expectations, or she felt kind of isolated, you know, in that big house in Paramus. Mm-hmm. I don't know for sure, but I would be curious, because I think we see so much of how she kind of operates in these reality TV friendships. And I do think she has had, you know, genuine relationships with people that she's been on the show with, mostly Teresa, sometimes Dolores, you know, here and there with other people. But when I think about it, I'm like, I don't know what it would look like for Jennifer Aiden to just be in kind of like her natural habitat with girlfriends.
That's such an interesting point.
That it's like, it's always a little more calculated than that. Mm. And seeing both Jen Fessler and Rachel have these specific experiences with her at the exact same time, essentially, where she's kind of, I don't know if she's digging or trying to plant seeds or just sort of gathering information, but she really is kind of, you know, talking to these two new women who came onto the show via people that Jennifer Aiden is not close with. And I don't know, that was kind of telling to me, because I appreciate the messiness of it, but I don't think it was very smart in terms of trying to make friends.
But also, is that Jen Aiden's goal?
Right. That it's like, I don't know if Jennifer Aiden really has an instinct of making friends. Like with Jen Fessler, there's no way that Jennifer Aiden put any thought into, if I talk shit about Margaret on the phone, that's going to make her like me more. So there had to be some other, there either had to be another motive for it, or it was completely thoughtless, absent-minded. And either way, it's, I think it's telling that when she meets somebody new, she isn't really thinking about like, oh, like what might we actually connect over, or like what do we have in common. It's like, it's not going to be talking shit about Margaret to Margaret's friend.
And you know what, I haven't listened to Jen Aiden's guest appearance on Teresa's pod yet, but I think Jen was on this week. But I have been listening to some episodes of Teresa's pod and Melissa's pod because I have found them honestly really interesting.
Okay.
Because these women are so...
Yeah, enlighten me.
...different from each other. It's just interesting. And I listened to Melissa. Melissa had Ira Madison on. I think it was her newest episode.
Melissa's... Whoever Melissa does Melissa's booking is like a gay guy on Twitter.
100%. Iconic.
Melissa selection. Doesn't know who Ira Madison is, and I love Melissa, but like, please.
And I loved it. But during the episode, Ira was talking about like how much he likes Jen Aiden, and you know, there's a little bit of a moment there of Melissa being like, she's not great. But Melissa's response to some of that was like, well, Jen Aiden is the one who's the most different off camera than on. She really treats Housewives as a performance, and I have no respect for that, which I thought was interesting and goes into the conversation or question of like, listen, regardless of whether or not Jen treats Housewives as a performance, who's in her inner circle when the performance is done?
I won't say specifics, but I have heard that same thing from someone else.
About Jen?
Yes.
I also think it's fairly obvious. Like, the Housewives discussed that on the last reunion, right? When Teresa was in the dressing room throwing down with Joe. And I think it was Melissa or no, I think it was Jackie turned to Jen and was like, listen, I know that, you know, when Teresa's back, you're going to do your thing of like being a totally different person. But I know that when she's not here, we can actually speak to you and like have a real conversation. So let's do that now. Like, I think that the show itself has been somewhat explicit in that, as has Jen.
It's funny because I think Jennifer Aiden is so captivating on TV.
Oh my God, she's a great housewife. I think she's great for New Jersey.
A fantastic housewife. I would love to see her on an Ultimate Girls trip.
Oh God, would love.
But in terms of the overall group dynamic, it's interesting because we've talked about how Jersey is split down the middle, but I think another difference between sort of the two factions maybe is that Margaret, Melissa, and Jackie are genuinely friends with each other.
Yeah.
They, you know, you can always break down, you know, how many times a week are they talking when they're not, I don't know. But they genuinely, I believe, enjoy each other's company.
Yep.
Spend time together when they are not filming.
Yep.
And care about each other's lives, families, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think equally they all care about Dolores. I think Dolores is, you know, gets along well with pretty much everyone. Mm-hmm. Teresa and Jen are a little bit on an island in that regard. From what I gather, from what I see, I think, you know, I don't want to speculate too much on what Teresa and Jen's personal relationship looks like when the cameras are off. But I just don't get the vibe that there is really that sort of closeness that we see with the other side of the group. And it's interesting that it's like, I think Teresa maybe just doesn't need that as much because she's, you know, a housewives institution. She's very focused on her family. And Jen maybe just isn't that interested in it.
Well, I know that they like go to dinner. They do dinner stuff. They've most recently been like tagging each other and whatever, doing their like dinner double date nights. But it does bring up, you know, friendship is different from everyone, and someone's expectation of like a part of our friendship is like us sharing vulnerability is not another person's expectation or experience. And maybe in that way Jen and Teresa are evenly matched when Jen is performing as the housewife that she seems to be performing on camera. I think what frustrates the other women is that there is an aspect of that performance that maybe continues to exist in her friendship with Teresa when the cameras are down.
Mm-hmm.
And if that isn't really the real Jen, or if Jen also has other aspects to herself in how she communicates or receives communication, whatever else, that she doesn't want us to see, well, I could understand why she would feel connection to Teresa in that way, mm-hmm. you know? But also I think Jen might have different needs. And it is interesting that we don't really see, she doesn't want us to see that in how she, let's say, performs friendship.
I'm curious to see as this season goes on how Danielle's relationship with Teresa and Jennifer develops. Because,
and Melissa.
Well,
but not develops, but
specifically
devolves.
With Teresa and Jen, in the sense that they are all friends, at least on the show. They're kind of, Danielle is like on that side of things. And I'm curious to get more of a sense of whether it seems like Danielle is actually connecting with those women on some kind of level where they see each other.
Yeah.
Versus just finding each other in a way that is helpful for the show. Because I, when talking so much about Jen and Teresa's relationship, it's like, at the very least, they've known each other for, I don't know, 5 years at this point. So even if they're not like, you know, ride or dies for each other in mm-hmm. real life, they've been through enough stuff on the show that it's like, okay, yeah, they've been around, they know each other, they've got each other's back, whatever. So I'm interested to see a new person come in on that side of the equation and whether it feels like it's just kind of a recruitment situation or like a genuine, I really feel like Jen and I are getting close.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because with, I don't know, with the other side of the group, I think there is a little more feeling of like, welcome into this sorority. Like we're, you know, we are caring about each other, and mm-hmm. I'm curious to see whether we could sort of get that vibe from Danielle's relationships.
Can I shift a little bit, but continuing down that New Jersey path, and I swear to God, I do want to get your thoughts on Miami as well. The Gia Gabriella moment with Melissa was, I think, tough for people to watch because there was a little bit of discomfort there. How are you processing the ways that Melissa spoke about her nieces in that confessional? They have hate for me or hate toward me, their behavior and how they've been communicating their feelings in some ways for the first time. How are you reacting and kind of taking all of that in?
Yeah, it's tough. I think in this thing that...
And Melania, sorry, Melania, I think it was, yeah.
It was Gia and Gabriella.
Oh, it was. Okay, great.
I think... What really threw me was the scene last week where it was Gia and Teresa and Louie, and then Gabriella showed up and they were all talking about the whole situation.
Mm.
And I know Louie wasn't present for that moment between Melissa and the girls, but I think Louie, I have this feeling that it's like there's this almost like this like seed that I don't, not that he's planting a seed, because certainly there has been ill will, you know, present before he even got there, but that I don't think he's helping the situation at all. And watching him last week say like, oh, you know, Melissa's garbage, like all this stuff. The fact that he's saying that in front of those
kids,
girls, which, yeah, I mean, like, whatever. Gia's not a kid, but, you know, the kid.
I mean,
the
I'm
kids
a kid
in the family.
Of my, yeah.
Yeah. It's
children.
That to me was tough because you know, I feel like Louis kind of has a way of talking out of both sides of his mouth mm-hmm. in terms of this situation. When he's, you know, telling Teresa she needs to call her brother and say she wants to make peace and invite him to the thing, it's not productive to do that. And then to go when 2 days ago you were just saying in front of the whole family how you think they're garbage and how you think it's so inappropriate and blah, 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 blah.
And he's a bitch boy and she's insecure.
Yeah. And I mean, he says that stuff regularly. We've seen it numerous times, but then he kind of gets this like treatment like he's this peacemaker and like he's this, you know, hope for, you know, a brighter day and to bring peace to the family, whatever. And with Gia and Gabriella, I think it's tough because I think they are totally entitled to whatever complicated feelings they have about this family situation. Clearly they've heard lots of stuff from their parents over the years. They've seen lots of stuff with their own eyes. They have experiences from when both of their parents had to spend time in prison and, you know, there's clearly a lot of disagreement over how Melissa and Joe were or weren't there for them during that mm-hmm. time. I think it's tough because I think it's sort of a no-win situation for Melissa at the same time that it's like, you know, she went to the event. Joe decided not to go. She was like, I think it's important that somebody goes. There was this brief moment. It was uncomfortable. I don't think it is going to help anything to say in the confessional chair that these girls have hate for you. But at the same time, I don't think that's an incorrect assessment of right. the situation. So I think while I don't think Melissa maybe helped anything by showing up or by saying that in the confessional, at the same time, it's like, what is she supposed to do, really? And I saw people, like, there were people on Twitter that were like, Melissa only went to that party for camera time. And it's like, I don't think it's that simple. And also, I don't think Melissa has been on this show for like 11 seasons. She does not need camera time. She is, you know, like, she is one of the central figures of the show.
The cameras are going to follow her where she goes.
Right. And it's like, you know, there are how many events over the course of the season? I think to boil it down to that is kind of unfair. And I think at the same time, if she hadn't gone, the same people would have said Melissa should have been there. So I think it's tough because it really is kind of a no-win situation, both with the viewing public and with the Judice side of the family.
It's like the more I think about that reunion, I don't know why I'm so concerned about how it's going to go when we've seen it happen already. Like, I keep thinking to myself, like, how is this going to work? Because they hate each other. And it's like, well, we had several seasons of that. Like, we had people tackling each other mm-hmm. in a castle in fucking Long Island. Like, we have seen this happen. We watched those seasons. It makes me sad that we're there. Because I think it was easier back then to understand how the show would move forward. And I know that it will. And the casting for the new Housewives, I think, has been spectacular, like so strong. But it's a pickle. Like, how do you litigate this separation that,
yeah,
by all appearances and seemingly experiences, every side wants?
Well, in the words of Louis Ruelas, want to make peace. As he wrote in the notebook,
a tough moment.
Want to make peace. Are you coming to party? It's like, is that where we're at, really?
But then Joe being like, I don't know.
Well, because she didn't.
I know. It's so tough.
In that moment, I do think Teresa on the phone should have said, I would really like for you to be there.
And maybe in Teresa's head, she thought me calling.
Yeah, I think that's what I think. Because, and then, you know, they both said, I love you on the phone. That was nice.
It's so sad. It's just honestly, but it's like it has to be for the best that these people don't have each other in their lives. Because obviously there's so much discomfort with mm-hmm. them continuing on this path. It was not meant to last.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's the thing. It's like you can parse out every conversation and interaction. In my heart, I do not believe that there is a reason for these two people to keep trying to make peace. Like,
yeah.
I don't think that's productive. But
yeah, and I forget which account, so apologies, but someone posted a clip. I assume it's from this season after Tree came back, where she like had sent a note maybe to Joe and Melissa of like, thank you for being with my daughters, and like, there was her talking about how Joe and Melissa were there for her and for her kids at that time. And it's just like, we're never gonna, I don't know what good enough means or what reality means at this point, because if we don't trust another person's intentions,
right,
let alone memory or behavior.
Right. Like, I can't spend any more time unpacking what specifically was meant by put food on the table. Like, I just can't. Like, what? Like, this happened in what, 2015? We gotta move on.
But they said it in 2022, right?
When yeah. They said the podcast, but we're talking about events that happened
Yeah, that we're also a part of a very, very, very traumatic, trying time. And also, who knows what support means and who knows who was there on what days. And the kids might be totally right. Melissa might be totally right. Everybody might be a little bit right. Teresa wasn't there because she was in federal prison. So, like, her memory is also different. Teresa saying, well, if Joe and Melissa were there, my then husband would have told me that. And I'm thinking, like, yeah, you really think that Joe would have been, Juicy Joe would have been like, wow, it's so great what your brother's been doing for the family. I don't know what acknowledgement looks like for this family anymore, nor have I really ever. And it's just, it is one of the, but I can't get enough of the nuance right now, but I know in about, you know, 3 seconds, I'm going to be exhausted for the next 15 episodes.
Yeah. Also, happy 2-week anniversary to Jen Shah being in prison.
We haven't heard from her. We've heard from other people, which I know you don't want to get into, but I will on the Patreon.
Are you
Heather Gay had some updates.
Did you subscribe to her newsletter?
No, I put this on Instagram. I was like, I don't remember what I put, but I was like, maybe don't steal at gmail.com. I'm not going to give her my info as a lead. Are you fucking kidding me?
No, I mean, I'm like, the sec, if she actually starts sending out like blog updates, somebody else will post them. That's, and then the thing, I can see.
She hasn't posted any. Nobody understood what was coming. And then what she did do was some sort of like YouTube with an expert who was like maybe selling a book or something. Unfortunately didn't have the capacity to watch that journey take place, except to say that I have nothing to say.
I didn't watch that. I mean, she like gave a statement to people or whatever, and that was enough for me. I'm like, I don't need to watch a video.
She's a piece of shit. It's like, she's the most, there's like no nuance there. I do not care about her, honestly, or her future even a little bit. The only sense of information I'd like to get, you know, down the line is how much money she's paid back and if we're going to see her arms laden with shopping bags as soon as she returns. But who even cares? I don't care about Jen Shah now. I highly doubt I'm going to care in 5.5 to 6 years.
Yeah, I mean, I have whatever. I don't. Yeah, it's not neither here nor there.
Like, or whatever. But happy anniversary to her. I don't know what you get for your 2-week anniversary in jail. I guess it depends on how much money you have in your, what is it, commissary account. But I'm sure she'll figure something out. Listen, we didn't talk about Miami at all. We just need to give a little bit of time. The finale, just continuing this record of excellence, I thought.
Record of excellence for sure. I am. This is maybe the most anticipation I've had for a Housewives reunion in a while, because it's interesting. Like, I've like interviewed most of the cast this season. Wow. I've like spent some time with them, and I still feel like I have no idea what to expect from this reunion.
Oh my God.
Because it's,
blessings.
It's so interesting with like Nicole and Larsa. At the end of the season, you almost start to see Nicole in the finale is like, you know, maybe we do have stuff in common. Like, we keep blah, 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 blah. And then they are in no sort of good terms right now. I am so curious to see how the Adriana versus Marisol and Alexia conversation is going to go down at the reunion. Mm. Because I'm sure that, to me, I mean, obviously coming off of these last two episodes, that is sort of the current hottest topic. But I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. I mean, Lisa's whole situation, she like confirmed her relationship this week with
whomever,
this guy Jody.
Oh, cute.
He's cute. He's not what I was expecting.
The Halloween reveal of her coming to the party, but his girlfriend not being allowed because of the, I mean, all of that. And then her calling him on speakerphone and him answering.
This shit, and talking to the women in the cast, like, these things were unfolding in real time as they were filming. They were getting all the notifications, all the, you know, calls for comment, all of this stuff. Like, that whole situation, I don't think it can really be overstated how intense it was during filming, after filming, in real life, real time. And yeah, I don't know.
I mean, trying to juggle all of this, then telling your friend circle cast that this is going on. Then Lenny is telling Page Six it's not real,
yeah,
but he's telling you in real time to get the fuck out. then you're dealing with continuing to film other people's issues, responding to that, trying to be supportive, trying to figure out if you're getting kicked out of your house. Then for his mom, who is just, it's like she's parroting information from one source to the other. I think she believes what she's saying in conversation with Lisa, but she's just making this very active choice to try to hold on to a relationship with her son by saying that this grown ass man shouldn't be left alone in his house because he might fuck someone. And that's Lisa's responsibility to never leave him because he doesn't know the direction his dick is going to go in. And to have that conversation with your mother-in-law when Lisa, as she's acknowledged, doesn't have a relationship or is somewhat estranged from her parents and considers this person her second mom and has worked her ass off to develop a relationship. And you know all this is being filmed. It's like the layers of potential reveals, humiliation, defensiveness, and upset added on to the fact that this is literally being filmed for other people's consumption. It's gotta be tense. It's like when you sign up for reality TV, the worst case scenario is what Lisa is currently experiencing. All of the vulnerability is being told to her while she's on camera.
Right. It's like Andy always says, you know, if you come on Housewives and you have skeletons in your closet, they're going to come out sooner or later. And it's like, Lisa, this season, it's like the bodies are decaying into skeletons in real time on camera. And it's not her fault.
Yeah. And some of those skeletons were like supermodels dressed as them hiding in a closet so they can fuck Lenny later at her goddamn Halloween party. Like, it's just, can this woman catch a break? God, I will never get this season back again. I hope everyone is treasuring the season of Miami, because, and that's not me being like negative Nelly. It's just saying that, like, when magic is happening, we just have to acknowledge that every episode this season has been a triumph, a genuine triumph.
And I think there is so much with certain storylines and things we see on Housewives. There is a lot of strategizing about when to do things so they aren't necessarily going to happen on camera. That's a whole conversation with Robin on Potomac at the end of this season and that situation. I'm curious how it's going to play out with Drew and Ralph's late breaking divorce
news.
Yeah,
she dropped it. She dropped it.
Because
drop it like Drew.
Atlanta, as far as I know, has finished filming for the season.
Fuck.
And so, I mean, I would hope we're going to get some insight into what happened with the process of the unraveling. But depending, you know, sometimes these divorce things can be very last minute and very kind of unexpected. Even though I don't think any of us are like truly shocked that Drew and Ralph aren't going to make it till the end. But, you know, the kind of on the ground circumstances can be unexpected. And that's something where with Lisa, obviously it was not her choice to have it play out like this on the season. Mm-hmm. But from an audience standpoint, you really couldn't ask for anything more gripping.
Yeah. And also the thing about Miami this season is at the end of the day, there is a sense of girl power. There are obvious factions that are taking place, but like, I will never forget also, because it's shown on every episode in a flashback, like Gertie's scream when Lisa's like, he has a girlfriend or something, because it's real. These people are really shocked and horrified and upset for her. And at the same time, potentially questioning their own dynamics, like the way that they have rallied for her. Yeah. And also, you know, experience divides with each other has been incredibly interesting, because the stakes for each woman in her life right now, the stakes of each cast member might be different. Like another one person's battle might be connected to something real and intense in another person. But there's no argument about what Lisa is facing. And I think that acknowledgement by the cast is incredibly key.
And you know what I found also really kind of amazing in these last couple episodes is that Lisa was the person in this cast who was trying the hardest to get Alexia and Marisol to sort of broker some kind of peace
with Adriana.
She was the one that was saying, look, you guys, like, I know her. Nobody is saying that what she said was okay. She's not saying what she said was okay, but like, she is sorry. She wants to talk to you. there was kind, she was the person that was the most kind of go between. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Adriana is close with Julia. She's close with Nicole, maybe, but like Lisa was the one kind of taking on that cause of trying mm-hmm. to get them to sort of find some middle ground, unsuccessfully in the end. Mm-hmm. But I think that is really kind of amazing that Lisa even decided to give a shit about that. Given the circumstances, she could easily have just kind of been like, yeah, I'm busy. Thanks.
Yeah,
leave me out of this one.
She could have said, I don't have capacity because of what I'm experiencing. But it also feels like she's using the energy around, I don't have any control over how Lenny is mistreating me, but I do have control over mm-hmm. how I can use my voice to maybe help someone heal.
Adriana is really, she's kind of fascinating to me. I feel like what she said about Frankie was like so out of pocket.
We can all agree.
We can all agree on that.
I hope we all agree.
She agrees on that.
She agrees on that.
So it is a little bit, I think it, I understand why they were so upset about it, but it starts to feel a little bit like you're harping on something that is not a point of debate. Like you can still have your strong feelings about it, but you don't need to explain to anyone else that you were hurt by it. Like if you don't want to talk to Adriana, that's fine. But it's a little bit like, you know, beating a dead horse.
I mean, well, I think some of the upset is because Adriana was like very vocally trying to defend mm-hmm. it and double down on it in the moment. And I think maybe a part of this that's key is her being like, I didn't understand why other people were upset for at least an hour, aka until her like story producer came in and was like, here's the deal.
Yeah. So I think
here's where you fucked up, that you're not going to be able to get through without acknowledging.
Where like, I think that trip came close enough to the end of filming that Alexia was simply just not ready to hear her.
Yeah.
But I'm curious now, going into reunion, if enough time had elapsed, or if Alexia's feelings had softened at all, or if Adriana had come up with some way to, you know, prove herself that she was sorry. I'm curious to see if there's going to be any kind of chipping away at that, you know.
Yeah, and Marisol, issue. For someone who's technically a friend of, has so much fucking power in this group mm-hmm. dynamic. I wonder how the reunion will go for Adriana, because if Marisol and Alexia have decided to, like, maybe this was set in motion prior, but, you know, really potentially move her out of the group.
Mm-hmm.
And as Lisa acknowledged, even in her like explanation to the group, that Adriana is a loner, which was not meant to be a punchline. That was really her saying, like, you know,
yeah,
all of our personalities are different. And
yeah,
this is both maybe her personality, but also just like her experience that she feels and is isolated.
Right.
I wonder how that will go.
Right. And when you look at Marisol's position in the group, her ride or die housewife is Alexia, who is, you know, one of, if not the pinnacle kind of mm-hmm. the cast. And then if you look at Adriana, also a very active friend of, her ride or die housewife in the cast is Julia, who I like Julia. I'm entertained by Julia. I think Julia brings something fun to the table.
A goat.
But Elvis the goat. But Julia is simply not in the same league as Alexia when it comes to her, you know, position within this franchise. And so I think with Adriana, I don't want Adriana to leave the show. I don't think she, you know, needs to be put on pause or whatever. And I do feel for her in a way, but it's like her footing in the group is not as strong.
Yeah, and also,
like, Nicole is not gonna like ride for Adriana, I don't think. I don't think Gertie's gonna ride for Adriana. I don't think Lisa's gonna ride for Adriana at the end of the day.
I do have to say that Kiki's, like, cheering on Julia for shutting the fuck up. Kiki gives me everything I need in her expressions during scenes and also her confessionals, where I'm like, she is, like, such a good friend of, and is so, so different from Marisol or Adriana in her role with the group. And her saying to Julia, like, you're doing so good. You're doing so
good. So good at shutting up.
So good at shutting up. I was dying. I was like, when she thought, this is the energy I need. This is
when she thought opening. A quail was like a rat. And then she's like,
their legs.
So she eats his legs. And they're like, no, the eggs.
I loved it. I cannot. It just, Miami is giving me everything that I need. And I cannot believe we're at the, how many episodes of the reunion? Is it two parts? Is it three parts?
I don't know.
Whatever it is, I trust them implicitly. I need next season already. And I also wonder, where the fuck is Orange County?
I feel like this week is the third week in a row that I have been like, there's no way we're not getting an Orange County trailer this week.
I don't know if it's a pacing thing because they're trying to make sure that space is filled. That was seemingly more of a concern during COVID than now.
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, so Orange County is clearly ready, next, whatever.
You would hope.
Well, I mean, they've been done filming for a while. You know, yeah. Clearly Tamara's on social media every day being like, hashtag RHOC, can't wait for season 17. She is a one-woman publicity machine at this point.
Yeah.
She wants the trailer more than any of us.
Amen.
Atlanta, like I said, is, as far as I know, done filming. Mm-hmm. So that should be... My best guess at this point would be like OC in April, Atlanta in May. Just that is pulled out of thin air in my mind. And then the New York reboot is done filming also. So
I would think fall, right? Don't you think?
I don't know. But if you think about the schedule right now, it feels like there's a lot going on. But Potomac is wrapping up this weekend. And then Miami has their reunion, and then that's done. So the only Housewives that's on the air after that is Jersey. So
maybe they're right to delay it.
I don't know.
What do you think is going to happen with Robin's future on Potomac in light of what we're about to see on Sunday night?
To be honest, I don't really think Robin is gonna get fired. I don't think she needs to get fired. I don't know. I'm in a weird place with Potomac right now because I feel like I enjoyed this season for the most part. I think some people had some kind of up and down feelings about it, maybe that it wasn't as sort of vital as it has been in recent years. I still enjoyed it. I think it's still such a strong cast. Mm-hmm. Even if some of the storylines, aka the Chris Bassett, you know, witch hunt, felt kind of unmoored. But I don't, toward the end of the season and into the reunion, I just feel like it has kind of
petered out.
Yeah, lost steam. And they're having a 90-minute third part of the reunion.
Don't understand why it's 90.
90 minutes. Well, because they haven't even gotten to husbands yet. And then they have Charisse hasn't come out yet, I don't think. And then
watch what happens.
Watch what happens. So it's like, I get that there is on paper a lot of stuff to cover, but it does feel a little bit like, are we still watching this? Is it like, oh, we're not quite done yet. Okay. And I don't mean that in like a rude way, because I do still think this is, I mean, obviously Potomac is a great franchise. I still think they have a great cast, but it does feel like this season has lacked just a little bit of that X factor that they have, for the most part, been able to keep really strong.
Yeah, it shows how excellent Potomac has been that this is considered the slump, but I do think it's, or some people consider it a slump rather, it's like, I can't say enough what a bad fucking move it was by Giselle and Robin to try to, you know, pre the filming of this season, figure things out in another direction using probably similar acts that would be used in talking about the Robin Wan of it all. It just like, it makes the, because of all of the jumps to what Robin did 2 weeks later or what we're going to see on Watch What Happens, it makes moments of potential gravity feel like a punchline.
It's been really tough. Yeah, it's been really tough. I do think the Robin situation, the season itself was not their strongest season. And then I think in terms of finale reunion, I do think the whole Robin situation kind of let the air out of the balloon for the show itself.
That's a great point.
And yeah, it's like, I don't think she needs to be immediately fired for what she's done. I think Housewives casting is tricky, and I always think that they should look at things more holistically and mm-hmm. really take some time and strategize more than just like, well, she did this, so she is fired. But I do think it's tough because there's nobody on this cast that I really think is like their time is up. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I do feel like something needs to be shuffled a little bit. And, you know, they've had 7 full-time housewives the last couple seasons. So it doesn't, and this season they had 7 housewives and 2 friends that were pretty present. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't really feel like there is room in the cast to add people without taking something away. I don't, to be honest, I think if I were going to get rid of one person after the season, it would probably be Wendy.
What?
I didn't expect that to get that reaction.
I thought you were going to say Mia.
No, I like Mia. No, I don't. Okay. I don't like Mia. I am entertained by Mia. Mia to me is entertaining in a very similar way to Drew Sidora.
Yeah, you enjoy the mess.
In that they are delusional.
Right.
They are really hard to pin down. They are not trustworthy. They are not reliable narrators.
Right.
But I think they are.
They're punchy.
They're punchy and having.
There's a good energy there.
Having somebody.
Interesting dynamic.
Having somebody in the group that is kind of a wild card energy, I think, is valuable. And with Wendy, I don't say that because I dislike her or because I think she is a bad housewife or that she, I don't, like I said, I don't think anyone in this group needs to be fired. I'm not like, she sucks, get her off the show. I just, when I think back on this season, I feel like Wendy is the person who kind of like popped the least for me. And maybe that might be, there might be an element of with the Robin and Giselle.
There we go.
I feel really, it's hard for me to imagine losing one of the OGs on this franchise.
Oh, that's not what I thought you were going to say.
And that's, maybe that's not, I mean, maybe that time will come, you know, like, because it's like, Karen, no. Ashley, no. Giselle and Robin, like, I don't, like, Giselle and Robin have always been, like, Potomac. And so when you think of, like, who to get rid of, it's really hard for me to wrap my mind around, like, are we demoting Giselle? Like, that to me seems like a horrible idea.
I definitely don't think Giselle should go anywhere. I think if we're going to do something, we demote Robin. I think, you know, maybe
demote this, Robin works for me.
Yeah, demoting Robin. I think it works for everybody but Robin, which is why it should work. Because it's, yeah. she demoted herself. She showed that she is not as valuable as we thought she was by how she tried to leverage her value.
Actually, you know what? I agree. Demote Robin to me is a similar move to demote Jackie. And I think demote Jackie makes sense in the way that she is, because she is still real friends with numerous women on the mm-hmm. cast.
She still has a presence.
Right. She still has a presence. There's no sense of her not being wanted there except by the people who already didn't want her there. And she's, you know, it frees up a little bit of the space. And I guess it makes sense that with Robin, that would be a way for her to kind of be punished a little bit, but still be given the opportunity to contribute in a way that could benefit us.
Yeah. The thing, though, with maybe axing Wendy, which I'm extremely not into, is is the fact that that would be almost a reward for Giselle and Robin. I think the last thing that Giselle and Robin need is to win right now. I think that we lose because of some of their decisions in trying to win. We, the audience, have lost. And I don't want to give them a single inch. While acknowledging that Giselle is a superstar, I actually think Giselle would be much more interesting and be forced to maybe show aspects of her life she doesn't want to be vulnerable about or reveal more or have to communicate her thoughts more when she's not in as strong an alliance if Robin was a friend of. Like, I think that actually helps Giselle, maybe not in, again, the ways that she would necessarily appreciate, but in ways that we would certainly, I think, appreciate when it comes to different dynamics. But man, I do not want Wendy to have a change in anything next season. I also don't know which Wendy we'll get next season, which is also exciting.
Okay, I think you've successfully convinced me. I think demote Robin.
That's it. Jacqueline's not going to be there.
Jacqueline won't be there. Charisse? Question mark.
I don't know what Charisse is doing right now. She's trying to be cheeky in a way that's not landing for me.
Actually, you know what? In the same vein that you were just saying of that Giselle and Robin shouldn't be rewarded, I think getting rid of Charisse would also...
Not reward them. Which I'm into.
In a way that I think would be effective. Because the thing is, Karen and Charisse hate each other for reasons maybe known, maybe unknown. Who the fuck really even cares that much?
Right.
But it's like, that's if they just flat out don't like each other, period, that's not exciting to watch for another season. And I don't think Charisse is bringing enough else to the table to really need her present in every episode. Mm. She makes me laugh sometimes, for sure. But like, whatever.
Yeah, it's just not doing anything for me that Giselle can't already do.
Okay, so if we ax Charisse and Jacqueline,
mm-hmm.
we demote Robin.
Then we're good.
Then we have six housewives, one friend.
We don't need anything else.
Maybe one new person?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I think Mia's new life will be new enough for us when she lies to us about whatever the hell is going on again, yeah, which, in a different way.
Maybe. So she's no longer bi-coastal between Charlotte and Potomac?
Oh man, her trying to make that make sense was a memory.
What's hilarious
that goes
is
in the
like,
memory box.
That was the version of her that was like baller CEO doing well was Sweetie. Bi-coastal between Charlotte and Potomac. So now she's in Baltimore?
She's in her quote unquote penthouse, and I just wonder.
Oh, back where she was living on her first season?
No, she's in a
they sold that.
Correct. She's in, to my understanding, like the version of penthouse Tom D'Agostino was in, where it's not a penthouse, it's just the top floor. Mm. I think that Mia's bringing that energy into trying to prove that she can still live a certain life while telling us they are only, you know, going off of their savings at this point. And I don't know what the fuck else they're going, you know, like what else they're working on. It's all kind of fucked up.
Yeah, I feel like Bravo is paying her like minimum wage. So
I don't know what's going on there. I do wonder, you know, I guess it's because we all thought it was bullshit, and Peter has said some stuff since on social, which G has responded to as well, but like we all kind of skated over Mia saying she saw tapes of Wendy and Peter and said quote unquote cookie, like
I don't know.
It's so ridiculous and insane, and I do not believe a single second of it. But like to say you saw this,
yeah,
is very specific.
I also just like I obviously we don't know fully what happened, but to me, like when you're with somebody like Wendy, getting into that territory, I'm like, you might be tiptoeing your way around a defamation lawsuit.
And listen, Michael has started that journey this week. Ugh. So that, I mean, I think everybody's saying this, but like, just imagine the discovery phase of Michael suing Candace for him saying that she's like, you know, hurting his reputation. Like, guy, the second you came into this universe, you hurt your fucking reputation. But sure, yeah, have your frivolous lawsuit and let's see the other side.
Yeah, and you know that like story has been circulating around about how he's like a real estate maven in like war-torn Somalia. It's like, this is not gonna end well for you.
Yeah, I don't the conspiracy theorist in me thinks about the way that Ashley had like her statement of his goodness at mm-hmm. the reunion when she was making clear, because I don't know what he was giving her for it, but I don't know if it was for the purposes of co-parenting harmoniously or not, but like he's such a good parent and all this other stuff and he's a good guy and whatever else. And I just wonder, like, when did he decide that this lawsuit was happening, and when did he maybe tell his estranged wife that it was going to be filed? It just makes me kind of wonder a little bit.
To be honest, I feel like he should feel lucky that Ashley isn't more in the mood to talk shit about him
100%.
On public platforms, because given the amount of celebrating from the fans about Ashley no longer being
happy
with Michael Darby,
all of our lives,
this entire season could have turned into a Michael Darby shit talking party.
Yeah.
And it really didn't. I mean, yeah, there were comments here and there. It's no like big secret that people weren't the biggest fan of Michael Darby, even within that group. But mm-hmm. like, it could have been worse for him this year.
Yeah. And I just like, he's just a, he's a piece of shit and always will be. So like, what are we trying to, what are we litigating here, guy? Just, like, and also, do you, are you not looking at what your estranged wife has said about other people and some of their activities?
Yeah.
Do we really want to open this door? Because you have the money, you have enough money to waste it. You've obviously saved a lot by not providing for your ex. So maybe he's just using money that Ashley thought she was going to get to fuck with Candace. It's just, he's just a, such a piece of shit. We all know he's trash. He's told us that for so many seasons. It's a joke. It just makes me wonder, like, when did he give Ashley the heads up, if at all, and how might that have, if it was given in advance, potentially had an impact on how she was discussing him or reacting to other people? I don't know. Whatever. Team Candace on this one.
And he owns that house. God.
Well, an LLC does, but I don't trust.
Well, yeah, I mean, she, it's not in her name.
Right. Which, if I was her.
That's depressing.
Yeah. Especially when you're saying that this was what I was getting in lieu of cash. And it's like, but what is the this?
Right.
What, like, is the getting?
A roof over your head is nice, but it's not the same as owning a house.
Yeah. Oh my God, on that note. Listen, you owned this episode. I'll say that much. Dylan Hafer, tell the AGs where they can follow you and Bravo by Batches on social. Any interviews you have coming up? That's like my new favorite thing to ask people. What do you got cooking on your podcast?
I got a few things on the cow, but you know, I it always makes me nervous to say that I'm interviewing someone before I have recorded said interview, because I'm like, the second I say it, they're going to cancel. But yeah, no, we have lots of good stuff. I had Danielle Oliveira from Summer House on my podcast this week. We had Margaret Josephs on last week. Lots of other good stuff happening. So you can listen to Mention It All wherever you listen to Andy's Girls. And we have the Top Chef is coming back next week. I was telling Sarah before we got on the mic, I watched the premiere the Top Chef International All-Stars season morning. Guys, it's so good. I love Top Chef.
Top Chef is extraordinary television. It is. It's so, I'm so behind. I haven't seen like a minute of it lately, but I need to catch up.
Padma Lakshmi is
just, but the judge, and it's so good, exquisite. And it's meaningful, it's great storytelling, it's people who are actually like, it's just, they're so talented. It's, I know there's a lot of cooking shows where it's like, watch this person be a fuck up, but these are just,
honestly, so
all-stars during original seasons, to see all-star all-stars is just, chef's kiss.
Top chef's kiss.
It is literal top chef's kiss.
But yeah, listen to Mention It All, follow at Bravo by Batches, and then you can follow me at Dylan Hafer.
Amazing, and follow me on social at Dame Galley, guys, and 3 new New Jersey specific Patreon episodes have gone up in the last week. There was a Satchel Spectacular with an index where someone listed that it was iconic. All of these episodes, so it's 3-hour-long episodes, so 3 hours of content, and then a 2-part Satchel Spectacular talking about your thoughts and feels about all things Jersey. I'm working on a Potomac Satchel Spectacular. Have gotten a lot of great feedback, insights, questions, thoughts from AGs. So look for that on the Andy's Girls Patreon soon. Patreon, the number one way to support this sassy little social experiment, at patreon.com/Andy's Girls. And on that note, Dill, I think you should come back after the Oscars so we can deep dive. Okay. And that's like in an hour and a half. So maybe just hang out here until then. On that note, guys, hope you're all doing okay, and we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye. Hey there, it's Sarah from the future. Chris Manzo and I are married. Everything is great. Just so you guys know, Dylan Hafer and I received the news about Tom and Ariana and Raquel literal moments after finishing this new episode of AG. So we immediately recorded an emergency Patreon. Head on over to patreon.com/Andy's Girls to get Dylan and my immediate reactions to all things VPR Michigas. These are maybe not the best days of their lives.